Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Do you think you people are? You are very, very dangerous people indeed. Your obsession with creating this Euro state means that you're happy to destroy democracy. You appear to be happy for millions and millions of people to be unemployed and to be poor. Untold millions must suffer so that your Euro dream can continue.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
The two faces of Eve. Yeah, that was a real great Englishman just now, giving him hell over there to the Euro-socialists who want to turn Europe into a bigger cesspool than it's already becoming under the Euro-socialists, destroying the nation-state, destroying a democracy itself, along the lines of what some in the Democrat Party are trying to do to this country. But you know what? Tomorrow's Thanksgiving. I'd rather talk about the price of turkey. I want to ask you something, and I'm very serious about this. How much did you pay a pound for turkey? Because I have a story to tell you about turkey. I was in L.A. for the last couple of days. I was at the Lakers game last night, way up near where one of the kids fell out of the two-year-old who fell out of the booth. I mean, I could see why. These are the private suites up there, and a friend of ours had a party for 20 people, with a turkey, by the way. And you look out, and there's glass between you and this stadium down below. But there's an area where there's almost no plexiglass. You could easily, you know, slip and fall out of there. And yet they're harassing the parents as they push the kid out of there. I'm crazy. But the stoned woman on heroin here in San Rafael rolled over on a baby and killed it while on the heroin. The prosecutor, Marin County, won't prosecute you here because she was a homeless woman. The poor homeless woman, a sacred cow. Anyway, I'm sitting there last night watching the game from high up in the thing. I'm not a sports fan to begin with. I left early. It took us an hour and a half to get from where we were in Beverly Hills to the Staples Center in a party bus. Now, I'm not a big party bus guy. I mean, I did it for the experience, and it was a family thing. There were 20 people in the party bus with loud rap music. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. It was as close to a North Korean mind-bending camp as you could ever get for me. And we got stuck in traffic. That, I mean, how many different things could be in one place that I don't like? A bus that has no windows that open, A. B, it's crowded. And C, rap music playing on the speakers. I had to go into the bus toilet to get away from the noise. It was a Greyhound bus that they converted to a party bus. And drinking, and we get to the stands, and you get in there. The funny thing is I got to tell you, here's a positive note. I'll try to be positive because it's holiday time. I don't want to be the eternal, you know, depressive cynic about everything. I try to be positive. It's almost impossible. I try to be an American. I promise you, I try very much to learn how to win friends and influence people. I swear I'm trying to be patriotic. I'm trying to be like all of the con men in the world who tell you to always be positive and optimistic. I swear I'm trying. So we get up in the booth. The floor of the basketball court in the Staples Center looked like 1,000 miles away. That's number one. I had to watch the game on the television screens that were hanging over this. But, you know, when the girls came out, the Lakers girls, the cheerleaders, and they were like in big screens, these beautiful girls. You know, I got a warm, patriotic feeling seeing these gorgeous girls cavorting on the floor with everyone cheering. And I said to myself, now there is a reason to kill. If only we had a patriotic government, we would use the beautiful girls of America as the war cry. I'm not joking with you right now. I'm telling you the exact truth. Men are very protective of their women and of women in general. The problem is the feminist movement and the degenerates in the media have eliminated the instinct that men have for protecting women. They've almost killed it. So I'm seeing the girls dancing on the screen, and I got a patriotic feeling. There was no flags involved. I felt more patriotic. I felt a warm glow about America because of the beautiful girls on the floor of the Lakers game than I have over the flag. It's not that I don't like the flag. It's just that I felt an emotional attachment to these gorgeous American girls who were hand-selected by the teams. You can only imagine what they have them go through to get that job. You could just imagine. It must make Harry B. Mayer look like an angel compared to what And so, therefore, as I was watching the girls, as I say on the big screen, I got a patriotic feeling come off my chest. And I thought, my God, if only we had a patriotic leader, he would make this war against terrorism be about protecting the beautiful women of America. But then I went over and I ate the turkey because I got more interested in the food. So the guy carved and carved, and the turkey, I had to avoid this and that. And then what else? There's nothing else to observe other than I said to them, I'm not going back in the bus. Arrange a car to pick me up at halftime. Guess what? I left about halftime, went down, went home. That was a very fast ride. And I'm riding home. Wait a minute. There's a bit. They got frightening at one point. I'm just giving you some stories. That's all the reality. A chef wants to talk turkey. I knew this would happen. If we start getting turkey recipes, it's interesting up to a point. But there's a limit to it, really. I mean, you know, go into an average Hofbräu, you get a turkey every second of the year. Turkey this, turkey that. Stick the damn thing in the oven at 350 degrees until it's done. Poke it and it's done. Now, of course, you can embroider on that. I want to ask you what you paid for your turkey. Because I'm building up to why I am talking about. So I was away. I flew in this morning with Teddy and a couple of friends on the plane. We flew in. We get home. It took us longer to drive from the airport to our house than it did to fly from L.A. That's a given because San Francisco is the most broken down city in the world. There's not another major city in the country, if you want to call it a major city. It's a charming small town. San Francisco is fundamentally a charming small town. Anyone who knows cities knows that. And I'm not knocking it. It's a small town with a small town mentality, all gussied up to think it's a Queen Anne. It's a Queen Anne with a Mary Ann front. Let's put it to you that way. Actually, it's a Mary Ann with a Queen Anne front, pardon me. San Francisco is Mary Ann with a Queen Anne front, is what I was trying to say. And there's no highway running in from anywhere into the city. It's slow traffic through. I get home, and my assistant was asked to get me a turkey. Now, it's not his fault. The turkey costs $52, uncooked. I said, am I reading this right? I've never paid $52 for a fresh turkey. But I had told him, I want a hippie turkey. When I say a hippie turkey, I want a natural turkey. I want a turkey with a PhD. I want a turkey that hasn't even touched a contaminant. I want a turkey that's eaten handheld feed given to him by girls who are raised at Bryn Mawr who know how to feed turkeys in a special sensitive way so the turkey doesn't even know it's about to be killed. So he gets me a hippie turkey, one of the all natural, at $3.99 a pound. $3.99 a pound this crook in this local market charged him. A 12-pounder was like $52, a 12.4-pound turkey. I don't know whether I'm going to send it back. It'll cost me more in time to send it back. So after the show, I'm going to go home and do what I do. I wash, you take it out of the bag, and you pull out the gizzards. A lot of people cook the turkey with the bag in it. They would like to take it with the bag and put it into the oven. They weren't raised in my mother's house. You take it out, you pull out the gizzards, you slop yourself up. You need like a rubber apron to do a turkey right. And by the way, you got to prepare it the night before. You cannot do all this in one day. Because by the time you do, you'll be a wreck by tomorrow when you eat it. You take out the gizzards. Then you got to kosher it. Even if you are Christian or an agnostic, you must kosher the bird, which I will tell you about when I turn right here in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
All right, welcome to the Savage Nation Thanksgiving Eve program. It's a famous institution known throughout North America. It's a show on which I generally tell you how to cook chestnuts without having them explode in the oven, and how to kosher your turkey to make certain that you don't get staphylococcus in your gullet and wind up in the emergency room tomorrow. The koshering actually is a very important thing to do with most meats, but poultry in particular It's a lost art. It's very simple. It's basically salting it and then rinsing it off, and that's what it comes down to. I'm not going to get into, like, soaking it in brine for a day. You know, you could do it quickly with kosher salt. After you wash it thoroughly inside and out, you then salt it inside and out, under the wings, where you put deodorant on your own arm. You lift up the wing and you put in salt. You rub the salt all over the outside and the inside, and then you just wash it off thoroughly. Always use cold water. Never use hot water in any treatment of pre-cooked foods, because you'll start the cooking process in some manner, and you'll start the growth of bacteria. These are little tricks that take a while to pick up along the way. Not a big deal. But that's why there's so much food contamination in America. People rush it, and they don't really remember these tricks. Anyway, I don't want to go into turkeys. So $52 a turkey now. Astounding. I could have gone to the Polo Lounge and probably ordered a whole turkey dinner for less money. But I'd rather do it in the house. I like the smell of turkey in the house, the cooking, the boner. But there's an idiot building a house nearby with the noise, with the illegal aliens. And they don't respect any holidays because they're, you know, poor men without a country. So what do they care what you're doing on Thanksgiving? Hammers and saws. So where was I? I was on the koshering. What was I talking about? The Lakers game, the flying home, which part of it? Teddy has to get a bath yet this afternoon. He stinks. Oh, my God. Teddy, I'm talking about. He just moved onto the... Because he was away for 5 days now. Now, normally he gets a bath that is freezing in L.A. It was freezing in L.A. I couldn't bathe him. I didn't bathe for 5 days, but I'm lucky in that regard. I've always been a person who does... I'm very Russian in that regard. Americans are obsessed. 2 showers a day, deodorant, sprays. They think that their bodies are offensive. I don't know where this comes from. It's probably from advertising. You keep yourself relatively clean. You don't need to shower every second. But anyway, the dog hasn't had a bath in 5 days. I'm not a dog. He is. He's got a fur coat. I don't. You know, he rubs in bushes. I got to get him up to the dog cleaner before the show is over. So you're going to hear barking. And at some point during the show is my assistant, RK, picks the dog up to take him up to Irene to get a bath. So he can be brought back and smell nice tonight in the bed like a stuffed animal. Because I'm not sleeping in a bed with a dog like that. Oof. You get impetigo. You touch a dog's fur like that and rub your eye. The next thing you know, you have an illness in your eye. You don't know how these things happen. Anyway, here I am back. I flew back. Here we are. Thanksgiving. Oh, what did you want to know about? Here, let's go to San Diego. Grayson, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for taking my call, Michael. I don't get where you're getting the high-priced turkeys, maybe the, like, specialty turkeys, but I found turkeys, like, up to 16 pounds for $5 at a Vons grocery store near here.
Yeah, well, that's the right price to pay. I asked for a hippie turkey. I wanted a hippie turkey that went to Berkeley with a PhD, so that's what they pay, $3.99 a pound. So what else is on your mind, Grayson?
I can't believe you would squander the opportunity of having that very nice party at the Laker game and leave during halftime. But I understand it was a bit of a nail-biter. I would have stayed, but...
No, you don't understand. I left during the World Series. I went to the game just before it at the stadium here. My son bought 10 seats. I lasted about 4 innings. I don't have the patience for sports. It's not... Now, let me explain something. I haven't been to a basketball game in at least a half a century. Because I'm not interested in the sport whatsoever. It's just not from my culture. But to start with, I don't know what people scream every minute they throw a ball. And screaming, okay, I understand the skill, but it's not particularly... I grew up on Einstein and Yasha Heifetz. Let me put it to you that way. I grew up on what Bertrand Russell wrote and Niels Bohr wrote. I'm not trying to be, you know, overly... I'm not interested in sports. I find it very boring. I mean, it's nice to... If you can do it, great. God bless you. I myself don't get anything out of it. But I went because it was a family thing, and I told you I'm trying to be an American. You understand I'm trying to be normal?
I understand. I myself am an intellectual, sort of like yourself.
I'm not an intellectual. I just don't like sports. It's two different things. They're not mutually exclusive. I know people who are very smart who like sports. I don't trust them. I don't suspect they really have a great intellect, but maybe they do. I don't know what they really think inside. But let me tell you this way. I go to the game. The last time I was at a basketball court was in Jamaica High School, when I was a high school student, and I did cheer the Jamaica high school team. I remember the sneakers and the squeaking and the ball, and it was very cheerful. But I had no reason to ever go back other than when my high school was playing, as I say, a half a century ago. Now play something from the Cleftones right now, because they were in Jamaica High School at that time. They were a big group at that time. No race wars. Black guys, we all got along. How come there were no race wars in the 50s? When did that come in? The race wars came in after the Great Society Democrats caused the race war with their steaming everybody up with hatred. When the Democrats pushed the Great Society on everybody, they steamed up the race war to divide and conquer. I used to go to the Apollo Theater. Here's a white kid with his friends would go to Harlem by subway and go to the Apollo Theater to hear rock and roll, and the audience was black and white, and nobody knifed each other, no one shot each other, no one. How did that happen? It all came down when the degenerate liberals brought the society to its knees in the 1960s, and we've never recovered from that degeneracy. That's all. The whole country is wrecked from it. 1-800-449. You know, I have wild turkeys up at one of the houses. I have this wild turkeys running around in the woods. I wouldn't kill them. I feel bad because I feel that if there's a little family of turkeys that managed to survive living in this county, despite the bobcats, despite the foxes running around with deprivation and digging for seeds and pecking. And you see a boy turkey and a girl turkey and two children. Who wants to kill a turkey? And that's now you got to say, so it's hypocrisy. I'm eating a turkey from a supermarket. It also was someone's son. I understand that. Or someone's daughter. But I didn't see it. It wasn't like running around in the woods. If this turkey family had the guts to survive, they remind me of Americans who are going to have to hide in the future and live off the land under Obama. Or the next despotic administration who might appoint Al Sharpton to some administration position where he bans talk show hosts, you know. Don't you just love it? The guy has a failed talk. Rockefeller says, ooh, ban anyone that you don't like who offend people. What country does he live in? North Korea? And yet, who has him on? Who has this clown charlatan on regularly? Bill O'Reilly has the clown on regularly and calls him the Reverend. It just shows you the taste that he has in people.
Savage.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
already the elevator music.
So very nice.
I'll turn it on. I never went for the canon singing type of thing. I had to do it in school. I hated it myself. I want to talk about books for a minute. Okay. Trickle Up Poverty, buy it Friday. I need you to buy it if you haven't yet for one reason. You have to send a message to the Democrats that you count. You have to have the book to know what Obama plans on doing next. That's number one. Number two, there's a website that's reporting the sales of various books. In the case of my book, he's off by 30%. The actual sales are 30% higher. They're reported on this particular website. Number three, there's a story came out yesterday, a press release. That's really a big change for me. Michael Savage to write two thrillers. St. Martin's Press has contracted for two thrillers from me. And the first novel will be called, it's coming out next summer. I've actually been working on it. I mean, I never stop. I never stop. I never stop. I don't stop. My mind doesn't stop, so how could I stop? His first novel is Abuse of Power. It's set in San Francisco and tells the story of a failed carjacking that reveals a government cover-up. A sinister plot involving British officials, and a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah that will make 9/11 look like child's play, the publisher said in a statement. It is scheduled for publication next summer. Matthew Shear, the publisher of St. Martin's and imprinter Macmillan, said Mr. Savage had the ability to fashion a good action-packed thriller that is sure to please his legions of fans. I just want to say two things about it. First of all, I said it in San Francisco because I know this city in a way others don't know it. I know of secret underground underground alleys. I also know of a hidden island that very few people even know exists. I know certain restaurants and certain individuals I'm writing into this book. When the movie comes out, and I'm sure it's going to be a movie, I'm going to make sure that they film it the way I see the city. It's going to be in my, I know there's a like certain light of this city. You know when you know a city that well, there's a light, there's a certain way a light looks, like the light on that city at certain times of day. I know where the camera should be when. But more than that, it's a sinister plot involving British officials It's fiction now, but it's going to be loosely based upon reality. I think you can understand why I say it's a sinister plot involving British officials. Because when you say British officials today, it's a sinister plot. Just any British official except the few nationalists who are left, or shall I say patriots, fundamentally they're all sinister Eurocentrists. For example, today, European MP Nigel Farage slammed the greed and inevitable failure of the EU. You cannot believe this. Listen to clip two. This is in Parliament today.
You know, your fanaticism is out in the open. You talked about the fact that it was a lie to believe that the nation state could exist in a 21st century globalized world. Well, that may be true in the case of Belgium, who haven't had a government for 6 months, but for the rest of us, right across every member state in this union, and perhaps this is why we see the fear in the faces, increasingly people are saying, we don't want that flag, we don't want the anthem, we don't want this political class, we want the whole thing consigned to the dustbin of history.
Listen to clip three.
Just who the hell do you think you people are? You are very, very dangerous people indeed. Your obsession with creating this Euro state means that you're happy to destroy democracy. You appear to be happy for millions and millions of people to be unemployed and to be poor. Untold millions must suffer so that your Euro dream can continue.
Now, this man is a real patriot in England. He's the type that we have here in small numbers, growing numbers, by the way. And he's screaming at the socialists who have tried to kill England. And that's why I say to you, when you say British officials and sinister, you know what I'm talking about. I'd like to get him involved in trying to get me off the list of banned individuals, but that's a separate story. So Savage to write two thrillers. And I don't want to get you involved with that, but it's going to be the first one in July or June. We'll see how that goes. I'm working around the clock doing this. I'm so involved with it, it's hard to tell you. Without giving it away, I don't want to get involved. I wrote Teddy into the book. I wrote my dog in. He's going to be in this sequence. Because how could you not have... In other words, if I'm projecting a character, I have to project a dog into this story. You understand? My dog. Anyway, I don't want to give away plot tricks. One little other detail. The protagonist, the hero, lives on a boat. Is that bad? Gee, I wonder why it's going to be set on in the yacht harbor with a dog. I wonder why the character is going to be so popular. Gee, I wonder why you're going to can't wait for the book to come out in the movie. So speaking of books and movies, I was in L.A. for the 4 days and then did my show. And one of the people I met is a very famous Hollywood individual. During the Lakers game, I'm upstairs in the suite. I don't have a BlackBerry. I don't carry them because the type is too small. I would need like a Braille BlackBerry if I got one. I can't strain my eyes any further than already. You know, I don't have access to the Mormon clinic to get the eyes cured overnight. I mean, you got to hand it to the Mr. Blackboard. He was dying of couldn't see. He was blinded and he lost his voice. Somehow he was cured miraculously overnight when my book came out, just to stay in the news. I don't have access to the Mormon clinic. So I don't want to read I get a message. When I get home, there's a message on my email from this Hollywood producer who was at the game downstairs, and he says, "Where are you?" I didn't get it till I already came home, so I said, "Well, I came home early." He said, "Oh," he said, "I had a few people I wanted to introduce you to down here at the Lakers game." So I said, "Well, okay, who are they?" Now, I'm not going to tell you their names, but you're not going to believe this. Let us put it to you this way. They're two of the highest figures in the Democrat Party. They're so high up that one of them was in the White House. And I said, wow, that would have been interesting. And I try to think about it. Why would this Hollywood powerhouse want me to meet a man who was fundamentally running America socially? And I thought about that, and I said, wouldn't it have been so bad? I would have liked to have met this guy down have him come up, whatever. But I didn't. Because at the end of the day, it's good to meet people who you disagree with face to face. Do you understand this? Do you have any idea that almost all wars on earth are caused by people who don't talk to each other? And those wars if the two people, okay, let me start with that. It's not always true. Hitler was a bad man and evil. Just as you have friends in business or people in business who are evil, they don't intend to do good. Hitler was bad. So Chamberlain goes there with good faith and comes back and says he signed the Anglo-German Naval Accord and there's never going to be a war again. The next day, Hitler invades Czechoslovakia because he was like a bad businessman. Hitler was an evil, bad degenerate. So you have business people like that. So not everybody has good intentions. But I'm an eternal optimist. I feel that I'm such a good person. And let's say I'm such a decent person. Let's put it to you that way. I don't like the word good. I'm a decent person. I don't have malevolence in my soul. Usually when I meet people who haven't heard, they've heard about me, but they never met me, they're completely disarmed. They're shocked that it's me. They thought I'd be some Joe Palooka, you know, evil guy. But then when they meet me, they actually like me. And at that point, you can maybe make some points with them and move them off their positions. Maybe, maybe not. But the point is, it's a good thing to talk to people, right? So I missed that opportunity. Perhaps the opportunity will reappear at another time. I don't believe they would change my opinion on borders, language, and culture. I believe that the country is moving in the direction that I've been writing about and speaking about since 1994. And I believe that the others on the side of Euro-socialism or U.S. socialism are frankly consigning themselves to the dustbin of history. That's my personal opinion. So we can go back to talking about Turkey. See, with me, if I start with Turkey, I end up with politics anyway. No matter how you start a show with me, a book, or this or that, everything is political. Everything is political. There's not a thing that isn't political. I'm going to give you another example. I'm on the plane back to that Wall Street Journal. The lead story is that the FBI is finally going after the hedge fund operators. They're going after them. They're bringing them in. They're dragging them in. I was amazed at the story because I said, I was excited. I said to Mrs. S., my chapter in Trickle Up Poverty, Nightmare on Wall Street, actually says the government should investigate the MFA, the MFA, which was created by George Soros and a group of others in the hedge fund business, to lobby Congress to make sure that the rules would be changed and to make sure that they'd make even more billions and not be touched. And I said, during the next few years, the Managed Funds Association, MFA, a group of hedge fund investors with whom Soros is affiliated, lobbied SEC Chairman Cox to have the rules changed. I said, why? So they could engineer a raid on U.S. markets to trigger a financial crisis that they foresaw could turn the election in favor of their 08 candidate, Barack Obama. This time, the strategy worked. In the end, some believe that George Soros and similarly minded financiers benefited in an extraordinary way while moving the country dangerously toward control by leftists. That's the top paragraph on page 81 of my book, Trickle Up Poverty. And now wait. In this chapter, I name names of members of the MFA, the Managed Funds Association. But here's the sad news. Although the FBI is investigating hedge fund operators, it looks to me like they're not going after the heads of the funds. Because I list some of the heads of the funds. And, you know, back in the 1700s, there was a statement that a fish rots from the head down. Unless you go after the head of the snake or the head of the fish, I'm going to tell you right now, the rot in the body politic of Wall Street is never going to go away. They're probably going to get some lieutenants. They're probably going to investigate some of the small fry who made millions of dollars. They're never going to investigate the people who made billions of dollars. I can almost guarantee it. The lieutenants of these guys are the ones who are going to take the fall, as usual. As in any crime plot, they rarely touch the heads of the organizations for reasons that you can pretty much figure out. It's usually the lieutenants who get indicted and fall. But I would say that there's a minor victory in terms that of what I spelled out in the trickle-up poverty in the Wall Street situation. I was the first, but probably not the last, to call for such an investigation in such a pronounced way and get such an exposure of my ideas. I mean, there were others who came along before me who were screaming for this, but they were not heard by many people. But with the huge success of 120,000, 30,000 copies of the book now sold, not in print, 135,000 or 130,000 sold, you figure that every book that's sold, two people have read it or two people have heard about it. These are influential people. It's people like you who talk about politics. You probably have mentioned it to more than two people. I would say that the book has already had a profound impact upon straightening out America, particularly straightening out Wall Street. And I only hope that the rules that they bent are straightened, you know, changed again. I don't want to get too political because most of you are not interested in this. They'd rather talk about Turkey than politics, you know. And we'll do both on the Savage Nation. I have a bit of an earache I'm telling you this only because I don't want you to think I'm being subdued because of any other reason. My ears hurt me a little bit, so I have to go a little softly. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise the ears hurt, and I don't want to. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm mentioning to you that my chapter on the Wall Street, Nightmare on Wall Street, and my call for an investigation of the MFA, the Managed Funds Association, the hedge fund manipulators, has borne fruit. The FBI is going after the hedge fund operators in a big way. My only complaint was they were going after, lieutenants rather than the captains who were behind it all. Irene in New York on WOR, go ahead, please.
Michael, the reason why the feds are going after the lieutenants is that they're trying to get all the lieutenants that are offshoots from one or two particular very big hedge funds. And what they're trying to do is to get them to talk, and they're all rolling on each other. Once they do that, they will get the big guys. This investigation with the big guys has been going on for about 3 years. And they got a few people, but they realized that if they don't get the guys around, they weren't going to get to the top. So I agree with you on everything. You're absolutely right on everything, but this one.
Right. As I pointed out, what they did here was, is they lobbied SEC Chairman Cox, who should be investigated as well, in my opinion, to change the rules. And they did change the rules, and they engineered the raid on U.S. markets and triggered the financial crisis that gave us Obama. I mean, do you agree with that surmise of mine?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm sending you a free copy of the book, by the way. Trickle Up Poverty goes out to you. Now, I want to rush back because time is short. I didn't think this would be a great show today. I thought it would be a throwaway show, but there's no such thing with me. Every show is a Persian miniature. No insult intended. So I was in Hollywood, right? Now, there's a murder over there that everyone's buzzing about, the murder of publicist Ronnie Chasin. And there are theories that are sweeping around Hollywood. It came up that people don't know why this veteran middle-aged publicist was shot to death as she drove home from the premiere of the movie Burlesque, right? November 16th, right in the street. One source tells the New York Post is that somebody close to Ronnie had substantial gambling debts of up to $500,000, and she was being chased for the money. So in other words, they made her the bait, and she refused to pay, so she paid the ultimate price. Another theory is that it was a Russian mob killing linked to investors on one of her many movies who were not satisfied with its performance, the source said. There are many other rumors, from an art deal gone wrong to jealousy over her successful Oscar campaigns. Another one said it could have been a gang initiation, citing recent unreported violent episodes in Beverly Hills. You hear this one? That's Mike. If you ask me, I'll tell you why I say this one. That sounds plausible. Now, last night I told you I left the game early, right? So a car comes to get us that we called for, and the guy's taking us home. We come up on the 101. It's about an hour away from the Staples Center where we were going. And he starts taking back streets. He's a foreign guy, like Middle Eastern. You know, in a nice suit, a middle-aged guy, doesn't say much, we're not a boo, he doesn't say a word. The minute he gets on these side streets in Beverly Hills, I got disoriented, I didn't know where we were. And he's turned to da-da-da, and the next thing he says, over here is where the publicist was killed, right? We're coming right to it. So I started to get for a second, I was like in a fiction story, where I was in the wrong car at the wrong time, and it was the wrong driver. And he's turning left, and a right, and a this, and a that. And it's a black street, no one's there, and they're here, we're coming upon it. So I said, what the hell is he telling me this story for? I didn't ask him for anything. Where does he come up? I didn't ask him about the Hollywood publicist murder. And sure enough, just as we go by a spot, to this day, there's TV cameras there and TV trucks still at the seat because they've seen this, still talking about it. So I said to him, what do you think happened? The driver says to me, I don't know what happened. He said, but it's an interesting story to me because you see that street there? She turned left and came down this street, and she was shot and she crashed over there. I said, so? He said, well, it's odd because they didn't find any shell casings, number one. But her window on the right, not her window, not the driver's side window, but the passenger side window was smashed in. But there were no shell casings. I said, that is really bizarre. So I said, so maybe it was someone she knew sitting in the car with her who did it and took the shell casings. He said, no, because the window was smashed in on the passenger side. I said, well, maybe he shot her and then got out of the car and then smashed in the window to make it look like they came in from outside. But now that I am reading this theory in the New York Post that it was a gang initiation, because there's unreported violent episodes in Beverly Hills going on of such incidents, I said, that is frightening, and that's certainly possible, that the gangs are trying to show that they're in charge and that the police can't stop them. Because I got to tell you something. You drive around Beverly Hills down in the flats. Some of the houses are very pretty. They look so vulnerable to me. They're like from the 1930s, 1940s, 50s, 60s. None of them, almost none of them have gates. None of them have walls. The people are all liberals living in dreamland that they're protected and nobody could ever touch them. No one could ever hurt them. There's no gates. There's virtually no security. So I said, I don't know. I don't know how this goes on. I know the Beverly Hills police are excellent, and I know it's a very well-patrolled area. But the fact of the matter is these houses are like sitting ducks. The people inside are like turkeys themselves. Whatever. I don't know anything more about it than this, but all I can tell you is that when the driver passed that spot, the few minutes before it spooked me because it came out of nowhere. And for one second, he looked sinister. You ever been in a situation where everything turns sinister in a second? All of a sudden, the streets look darker. He looked sinister. His suit looked shabbier. His mustache looked untrimmed, more untrimmed than normal. There was more sweat on his forehead than normal. His cuff looked scruffier than it was. For one second, you know how your perceptions change? Human beings are amazing, but our perceptions change according to situations. You know, we're not consistent unless we're on medication and we're Jimmy Carter.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
There's no place like home for the holiday.
Get out your cardigan.
No matter,
it's holiday time. Turkey tomorrow, shopping Friday. Bon Ami on Saturday, major depression Sunday, hospitalization Monday. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Everyone's depressed. Everyone, I'm feeling it. I need medication. The whole country of idiots. A whole country, everyone's been brainwashed by the AMA into thinking that they're depressed, they need medication. A mass hypnosis. In the first hour, ladies and gentlemen, we were talking about, oh my God, I can't review, the Hollywood murder of the publicist. How to kosher a turkey. How to cook chestnuts, which I didn't tell you yet. The fact that I've contracted with St. Martin's Press to publish 2 thriller novels. That's so good. That's so good. The fact that trickle-up poverty has a chapter on Wall Street that is partly responsible for the FBI's crackdown on the hedge fund manipulators. The fact that there's so much, I can't remember it all. Thank God someone just picked up Teddy to take him to Irene's for a bath. Whew, did he need it. In fact, after the show, I think I'll partake of the same thing. I'll kosher myself in a shower without the salt. It's too cold. I don't like to shower in the cold. You know, there are practical reasons for not showering and wetting your head. Didn't your mother teach you to wet your head on a cold day? They don't even teach you that anymore. You see, again, everything is backwards. People think they have to look good, so they shampoo every day. They're bald by 29. They rub the hair out of their head with caustic chemicals that smell like a bordello. A man shouldn't smell like a bordello. Number one, I didn't say you should stink. That's not the mark of a man. You could smell. But why do you have to rub your hair every day with it? I'm from another universe. Leave me alone. It's how I see the world. Now, if you don't find any of this intriguing or interesting, it's too bad. It means that your mind isn't fast enough for the show. If, on the other hand, you like switching back from Euro-socialism to the price of turkeys to Hollywood and then on to the Lakers game and Teddy going to the hair washer, that's good. So I'll take some calls on this. I don't want to talk again about what I already said. The sinister. I ended the hour by talking about how sinister things can become in a moment. When I was in the car last night and all of a sudden he looked seedier, the driver. When he said, soon we will pass where the woman was killed, and I didn't even ask him, where'd that come from? He looked like a seedy guy in an early James Bond movie. I hope he's not listening. I don't think they know about talk radio down in that area. But he still spoke very bad English, even though he said, I born here. He said, I born here, and he couldn't speak English. I don't understand what the educational system must be in L.A. He said, I was taxi driver. For many years, I was mugged 5 times. The whole thing started to go bad. I was a minute away from demanding that at the next light I get out in the middle of the street. But then it would have been like a bad dream. I have repetitive nightmares of being trapped in England. I told you that I can't get out of Heathrow. I've had them for years prior to being banned in England. I had this nightmare about being trapped at Heathrow and I can't get out. I have another repetitive nightmare, which I shouldn't tell you because then you'd think that you're a psychiatrist and you'll start interpreting for me. I'm not interested. Who is the hand reader who listens to this show? I have a guy who reads palms. I forget his name. I'll think of it for a minute. He wrote a book. I met him many years ago, 15 years ago. And I sent him my hand. He read my hand at a radio exposition Wednesday. I don't remember his name. Pardon me. I'm drawing a blank. So about 6 months ago, do you remember on this show I told you that he looked at my palm and he said 2011 will be the year you've been waiting for all your life? All the rewards that you're entitled to, all the struggles you have had, are suddenly going to come true. God is going to bless you for all the good works you have done. And all of the evil enemies that you've had in your life are going to fall by the wayside. And the more they try to impose their evil upon you, the more evil is going to fall upon them. I could not believe it when he wrote that to me. I read it on the air about 6 months ago. I'm entitled. I put in. I've been working since I'm 6 years old, number one. It's not that I'm complaining, but there have been impediments in the way of my life almost every step of the way, which you have to overcome, because that's really what life is. Life is knowing how to overcome impediments, by the way. Don't assume you're going to have smooth sailing. You go out on a boat, for example, and I don't care the size. It could be a calm sea. At some point, you're going to encounter a this or a that. A following sea could come upon you in your yacht. And if you have a semi-displacement hull, the following sea is a very dangerous situation. Because semi-displacement hulls are not designed very well for following seas, and you could wind up swamped if you don't know how to use your trim tabs and increase your engine speed so you're surfing ahead of the waves. It's the same in life. You have to understand that things are going to come up, unexpected swells, squalls, and that you have to deal with them. That's all. And there are evil people that pop up that God has to take care of. I mean, you know, God is, leave vengeance to God. I said that to a relative many years ago. I had a relative once say, this person is the worst. I want this to happen. Then do and get even. I said, no, let God seek vengeance. It's not humans. It's not your place. So here we are. Here we are talking about everything from turkeys to Hollywood and the Lakers game and theories of the Lakers game and who it is that I didn't meet. Well, you're never going to know because I'm not telling you. That I could have met, who could have done nothing for me but caused me trouble and a headache, no matter how they would have smiled, that things would have gotten. So here it is. Who killed her? Who knows? How many other murders have occurred in Beverly Hills and Hollywood? Everything has to be complicated. Why do you think it happened? There are other cases. There are other cases that are listed now in the New York Post that the people are talking about. People may be baffled, Hollywood may be baffled, but the only people who are not baffled by this are the fans of Michael Jackson. The Texas try and find connections with Michael Jackson since Michael's murder. Many people around him or close to him have been dropping like flies. That's a nuts story. That nothing to do. I don't care about Michael Jackson. That was a drug addiction thing. She was coming home from the after party for Burlesque, a movie that Kenny Ortega directed, and two of the dancers in This Is It were actors. And then they go into, there's all sorts of theories going on. One after the other. I don't know any of this stuff. I don't live down there. I may live down there part-time. I'm actually a funny guy. I like Hollywood. Even if I don't go out, I enjoy being in Hollywood. Do you know that? I enjoy the lights of cities to begin with. But I find the youth of Hollywood to be very interesting. Even though the most of them are drug addicts and sex maniacs, it's a very interesting... It's not that bad to be around. I mean, which way do you want to go? You want to live in an Amish village? Let's say you have a choice. It's one or the other. You could live in an Amish village, and you could you could mend things with thread. Or you could have a choice of going to Sunset Boulevard and seeing the sexy girls who are all degenerate walking around with droopy. I mean, it's America. Just enjoy it all. What are you going to do? It's not denigrating the Amish. I admire them. I don't want to live there, though. Where are you going to go for a coffee? Or what if you want smoked salmon? I mean, I'm sure they can fish for trout. And maybe even there's some salmon in Pennsylvania, but I don't know if they know how to smoke it as well as they do in a certain... I am a fan myself of smoked fish. For years, I didn't touch it. I thought it was toxic. But if you get smoked fish that isn't too smoked up with artificial wood smoke, and I don't use sulfites and no nitrites, it's very delicious stuff. In fact, I'm going to tell you a story about smoked food that you may not be interested in. Because you're under the assumption that everything that's raw is good for you. First of all, you're wrong. I can name 10 raw foods that'll kill you within minutes. That's number one. It's such nonsense that the people have in their heads. You want to eat a raw diet, good for you. Get back to me when you're 70. See if you're still on the earth. I love guys in their 30s who look good now. They all have theories on survival. Get back to me when they're 70. Then they can give me their theories on survival. So there was a guy, 95, who sold smoked fish in New York. Jewish guy. All his brothers and the father, they all lived into their 90s. They lived on smoked foods. Smoked lox, smoked pike, smoked herring, smoked whitefish, smoked LSMFT. Everything was smoked. So how bad could it be if they lived on smoked foods? I don't understand that part of it. Well, mainly it was fish that they were eating. It was smoked fish. It was not like smoked pork products, number one. So you have to understand that there's subtleties to the whole discussion. So after I read that article, I had a dispensation to start eating smoked salmon again. I just don't eat it with the nitrites in it. I can't stand that taste, and I don't like the overly smoked taste. That's the mark of a bad product, by the way. You can taste the smoky taste. It's bad. It's the same with anything else. When it's over the top in that particular element, it's no good. It's like wine. The same thing with wine. If it's an over-the-top variety of that particular thing, it's horrible. Like, I happen to like red wines in the winter. Are you interested in this, or you'd rather talk again about how do you kosher a turkey, whether you do it with the salt? I don't want to do that right now. If I happen to like a red wine in the winter only, if I drink a red wine in the warm weather, a migraine for 3 days, I don't care how good it is. The temperature outside drops below 55, I can drink red wine. My blood changes. But I happen to like only one. I like Sante Miglion, which I grew up on. You wouldn't understand that. You thought I grew up on Manischewitz. I didn't. I grew up on Sante Miglion. And I do like wines of that particular region of France. I don't do very well with California wines. I know it's sacrilegious. I'm supposed to like boost Napa Valley. So, you know, I don't particularly care for it that very much. I don't know that they... I know they win prizes. What does a prize mean? What does winning a prize mean in anything? Very little. Generally, it's who you can smear off, you get a prize. The Nobel Prize is a fake prize. Obama wins the Nobel Peace Prize a day after he was president. That shows you what the Nobel Peace Prize is worth. Al Gore wins the Nobel Peace Prize for false science. Shows you what the prize in science is worth today. Everything's political. So it's the same with wine or food, by and large. You have to go on your own instincts and your own tastes. So to make a long story short, I'd rather have a beer tomorrow than a red wine anyway. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Who's coming out at the last minute. U.S. negotiations with Russia on missile defense may doom nuclear treaty. Apparently, he read my book, Trickle Up Poverty, which I was screaming about this. Don't support the START Treaty. I'm alarmed by it. Obama is basically disarming the United States of America during these sleepy times that you people are asleep. But thank God one Republican senator is going to oppose the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. A Republican senator, alarmed by the Obama administration's cooperation with Russia on a missile defense agreement, says he has the votes to reject the Nuclear Arms Reduction Treaty that has been a top priority of the White House. He should say of the communist White House. An aide to Republican Senator John Kyle of Arizona told Fox News on Wednesday that the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty START will not pass during the lame duck session, potentially dealing a death blow to the deal, which faces Republican opposition in the Senate that is expected to grow next year when the party regains six seats. That is fantastic. That is so good. You know, I'm not going to bore you with the details. It's all in my book. This START treaty is the disarmament of the United States of America. It's almost identical to what Neville Chamberlain did to the British in the late 1930s. And it should not be signed, particularly during a closed session like this, particularly when there have been no hearings on this. This is, again, Obama the naked Marxist at work. You don't understand what's going on. You have no idea what's going on here. But the radical leftists in this country, starting with Obama, want to pass the START treaty during a lame duck session. Yeah, they want to reduce U.S. and Russian strategic warhead arsenals. It sounds good on paper. But do you know what else is in the START treaty? It's in my book, Trickle Up Poverty. And you know what? I've told it to you 50 times what else is in there. I studied this. How about taking apart our missile defenses? How about taking apart our nuclear submarines by 50%, mothballing them? How about eliminating 50% of our strategic bomber command? Do you have any idea what this man wants to do to us? And here's a time when North Korea is bombarding the South, an island of South Korea. Here's a time when Iran is racing ahead with centrifuges to build nuclear weapons. Already Obama's cut 44% of our missile defense force that would protect the United States from Iran. Already he's done that. And here we are reliving history. As Santayana, the Spanish philosopher, said, those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. And many of us do not know our history. Obama is a naked Marxist, in my opinion, as I so aptly point out in Trickle Up Poverty. But more than that, he is disarming us. You know, you could disagree with him or me on social policy, and I'm sure we would disagree on some aspects of social policy. But when it comes to national defense, do you want to render us impotent in the world in which we live with this man in the White House who doesn't seem to understand the world we live in, or perhaps he understands it too well? That even frightens me even more so. Perhaps he understands the world we live in all too well, which is why he wants to render us not incapable of defending ourselves, but let us say less capable, or make it so that there's no point in defending ourselves at a certain point. 1-800-449-82. I don't expect you to call about that. I think this is far more important than Obamacare. He has to be stopped. Thank God Senator Kyle of Arizona has the votes, he says, to block the START treaty. Let's pray to God that he stops Obama before it's too late, before we are virtually unable to defend ourselves. But remember, Obama signed the START treaty with the Russian president at the Prague Castle last May. It came very quickly, but you don't know the secrets that are in that START treaty, and what I've read frightens the heck out of me. I know many of you, 130,000 of you, have bought my book, so it means a couple of 100,000 people have read about the START treaty in terms of the military. It's a whole chapter. I don't want to bore you by reading a piece of a chapter. But to me, there's nothing more sacred than national security. Nothing. Obama's war on the military and on national security is in the book. I cannot believe that all we're talking about is don't ask, don't tell at a time like this. We have a man who wants to destroy NASA. Obama not only wants to denuke us, that means declaw us, he wants to take down NASA and render us incapable of defending ourselves in space.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I think I've done all the politics I'm going to do already today. I told you the START Treaty is a disaster. I'm glad Senator Kyle's standing up to the president and he has the votes to block it, and that's good. I want to read you a cute email since everyone's mind is somewhere else, and I'm only being listened to right now by my, let's say, loyalist fans. Most normal people are not listening to the radio right now. They're arguing with their relatives over how to cook a turkey. I told you that I was going to have my assistant pick up Teddy at the top of last hour to take him to the to Irene, the dog care person, our friend Irene. He needed a bath, right? So he was picked up at 4 o'clock, well, at the top of the hour because different times. So I got this from him in the car. Teddy is fine. It was funny, though, when he heard you say his name on the radio, he sat up and looked at the radio, then looked at me with a smile. Have a nice Thanksgiving, Dr. Savage. All right, thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it. He heard his name, his master's voice. He does smile. I mean, he breaks people's hearts. What a hit he was on Rodeo Drive. My God. Everyone wanted to buy him. It's like, what kind of dog is that? Everybody wanted Teddy. I mean, everyone had cute dogs. But mine was the cutest. You know, it's like babies. Everyone thinks there is. But really, everybody wanted it. What kind of dog? The Japanese went crazy for him. They must have thought he was a new Gucci-like dog. They must have thought it was like a Gucci animal thing that they could buy. Everyone wanted to gobble his dog up. That's why I'm putting him in my novel. Well, I don't want to tell you what the bad guys do to him. It's awful. Oh, don't let me give it away. Oh, my goodness. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Everyone's got a blackberry, a blueberry, a greenberry, a pinkberry. I don't want them. I don't want a blackberry because my eyes, and I told you, I can't do it. That's day and night you spend it. Because then there's nothing, zero. There's zero privacy at that point. You're in the toilet, the thing rings, you got to open it up. It's an obsession. I don't want it. It's too small. The print is too small of it. All right, if I could go to the same hospital that he went and get the treatment, the miracle cure. How did a guy lose his voice, I wonder, and his eyes, and go blind and one day and get cured overnight? It's amazing. He had hysterical blindness and couldn't talk, the guy from Fox News. And miraculously, he was cured after one trip to Utah. Must be the water or something, the Tumwater. Tumwater was from Oregon for a certain beer. That was a good ad campaign. Certain ad campaigns stuck. To this day, I remember ads from when I was a child, and I don't even use the products. Like the Gillette Blue Blades from the fights I had to watch with my father. Use Gillette Blue Blades for the quickest lick of shave of all. But I don't use Gillette. Shows you. You can remember the jingle and not use the product. Then the See the USA with her. Dinah Shore, you have the USA. Play it. I'm in the mood for a little nostalgia. Hit the See the USA. If you could find it. If not, it's not a big deal. I won't get mad.
USA in your Chevrolet. America is
all right, turn it off. See, no, but I don't buy a Chevrolet anyway. I don't have a Chevrolet, but I remember the ad. Certain things like that. Or how about Johnny Philip Morris, the people who killed my father? God rest his soul. With that cigarette. It was because of the midget in it. For some reason, the midget sold cigarettes. I still to this day don't understand what the appeal was to men of that generation. What? All right, so all through the 50s, this guy, the midget, would come out and call for Philip Morris, and my father smoked two packs a day. Holidays would come around, Christmas, and Ma, what can I get him? Get him nothing, your father don't want to get him a carton of cigarettes. A carton of cigarettes, I helped, you know, it was terrible. He's looking at me, I got a picture of him. I love my father in a certain way. In other ways, I didn't get along with him. We were two with the antlers, knocking heads together day and night after I became pubescent. At a certain point of puberty, it was not already a picnic. It was nice till I was 11, and a fat little kid eating French fries and steak in the house, you know, no threat to him. Little cherubic, Mike. But the minute you got a little secondary, that already, the horn, bang, 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 the heads, not 1 minute's peace. But I don't take responsibility for it. I mean, you know, there's genetics and cigarettes. But why did men of that generation, is there an ad person listening to the show could tell me why a midget, it was a midget, the guy who did the Johnny Philip Morris, that guy, we knew his name for a while. He lived in Brooklyn in Sheepshead Bay. He liked power vessels, and he had a thing for showgirls. He was an Italian guy. He did very well for himself with that. He was an early guy in the ad business. You know, they used him, made a bundle. I mean, for those days, he had a Chris Kraft cabin cruiser by today's standards. And he liked the girls. And that's another thing I don't understand. I don't want to get into it. It's a family show. But is a certain structural problem between a man of a certain small stature and a normal woman that I'll never understand what the appeal is. I don't understand how that works. I mean, he had money. All right. But even with money, I mean, at a certain point, isn't there a limit to which, a limit below which women won't go or not when they're a certain calling? And the word call is the operational word in that? That's not a bad, that is a nice turn of phrase. By the way, I must say so myself. I should consider a career in radio. You know, the years I wasn't in radio, I was doing other things. I had a friend who used to say to me, you know, you have a way with words, you should consider a career in radio. I used to say to him, how am I going to get into radio? How am I going to get in this field? I think it's God's will. You know, I shouldn't do this now. That gets preachy, and the agnostics, the atheists, and the liberals don't like that when I go down the road of God. I believe God's hand's involved in a lot of things in my life, and yours too. I do. Oh, now we're going to get the callers. Yes, Mike, if it wasn't for... But I'm not knocking it. If this is what you like, this is what's, you know, keeps you going, good for you. But how do you explain the utter bastards on this earth who don't believe in God, who do everything mean to everyone around them who do well? How do you explain that? I never understood that part of it. They should suffer. Not a child should have leukemia. They should get leukemia. The evil people in business, for example, they should get the leukemia. How come they don't get it? How come they thrive to age 85 and live on? How do you explain that to me? Can anyone explain that to me? Why bad people do well sometimes and why good people suffer? I know a rabbi wrote a book. I wouldn't read that book years ago. Why good people do well or why good people do bad. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm basically, in a way, survivalist mentally. I believe that you have to fight for everything on earth, and people will try to take everything away from you. And that if you're not smart enough or quick enough, you're going to wind up on the sidelines of life. I wasn't always like this. I was a pretty nice guy, and in my own way, mellow. I never believed what my father told me. I fought with him over it. He was a Russian, and he knew what the struggles were to come here as an immigrant, and... He warned me, and I was like brainwashed a little bit in college. I would come on with crazy ideas about society, about how you had to help the downtrodden. He said, you out of your stupid mind, they'll wind up taking your job, idiot. He was right. They took my job, idiot, through affirmative action. Take a look at what you have in the colleges today. Go take a look. Go take a look at what the average college boy is today. Go take a look. Take a look at what happened. But anyway, so he was right about that, but it took me a long time to realize it. Till eventually I decided, all right, enough is enough. So here we are. Now we're talking about health care in America and Obamacare. It's the same thing. He wants to destroy the most important and best health care system in the world. Where's the king going? Where's the king of Saudi Arabia going for tests? He's going to Cuba? He's going for tests in Venezuela? He's going to New York, probably Cedar Sinai, my guess is. He ain't going to NYU Medical Center, I don't think. I think he's going to Cedar Sinai. Well, that's in L.A., so we don't know. He's in New York, so where could he be going? New York Presbyterian, but they're going to let the Jewish doctor come in the back door. Because the king can't admit that he has a Hebrew touch him. All right, bring the Hebrew in now. The Hebrew may come in now. Bring in the Hebrew. All right, the Hebrew may approach the king. All right, the Hebrew may touch the gown of the king. Bring the Hebrew forward. All right, the Hebrew may approach the king again. The Hebrew may bow to the king. I could just imagine. I mean, if I wrote the script, it would be something nuts like that. 1-800-449-8255. I know some of you laughed hysterically, almost turned the turkey over in the oven when I go into a voice. I'm tired. I'm like on fighter in the 10th round right now. I feel like I'm in the 10th round of an 8-round fight. But I don't know how to quit. I don't know how to quit at this point. I just stay in there, I get up, I do a show, no matter what's thrown at me, get up, do your show, that's all. Don't matter, whatever, didn't go bad, headache, your ears don't work, this, that, get up, do your show. Show time, get up, do the show. The show must go on, get up, do your show. Say, should I stay off the air, my ears hurt, I don't feel good, I got a mic. Get up, you got to do your show, no matter what. It's a blessing, God gave you the blessing to do a show, so you're going to do the show. No matter what, no matter what impediments come your way, you're going to do your show. Because it's not about you. Okay, yes, Michael, I do tell you personal stories about a dog or a turkey. But notice what else you got today. You got a real lesson in the gangsters of Wall Street. And how I covered it in trickle-up poverty and how it's had its effect on the FBI, no doubt. They may be using the chapter to a certain extent because names are named in there. Then I told you about the dangers of the Star Treaty. Over and over again, it was in the book. For all I know, Senator Kyle's office used it as a position paper in order to get started. I don't know. Books are serious, too. They're serious business. Just remember, to the Hebrew, the word is the deed, whatever that may mean, but it's in a very important sentence. Who wrote that? Whoever knows who wrote to the Hebrew, the word is the deed, wins a prize. No one knows that. So obscure. Nobody knows what that is. The Jewish people are originally the people of the book. You understand that. You have to understand how powerful that statement is. The people of the book. What does that mean? Well, okay, I'll let you figure it out. Ecclesiastes, of the making of many books, there is no end. What is that? What does that have to do with anything? I'll figure that one out, too. What do you think, a book is just about pictures of my trip to Hollywood, or the comedian did a book with pictures of the earth, stupid pictures of earth and glaciers? That's a book. Everything's a book today. A rap artist with bling in his eyes, he writes a book. That's a book too, but it's not a book. A book has to be serious, a serious business. It's not a fake thing. You have to make a point with it. The written word is a profound thing. It's a gift. Print itself is a gift. What is between the letters themselves is a very special gift. The white space between the black print sends a message to those of us who understand what we are doing. And those of us who really understand what they are doing, even a blank page can have a message. If you know how to look at the blank page, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. It's a big family weekend, and we should be positive, but I got to tell you something interesting happened. Someone sent me a book on how to curse someone in four steps. I know this is so crazy, and it was written by someone who was very, very dark. He's a famed sorcerer and an occult author, and I'm not going to tell you about it. And he says, if you have an enemy, the only way to solve your problem is by cursing him. And he says, forget about the golden rule and resign yourself to the fact that vengeance, and plenty of it, is the only thing that will make you happy. It's a four-point plan for unleashing the evil powers that will give you the upper hand in your battle with any enemy, no matter how strong he might think he is. And he says any person can cast spells and put curses on people. Now, I know this is considered horrible to Christians and to Jews, but the fact of the matter is, what if you have an evil person in your life who you've given your lifeblood to, who you've made? No, why did this book arrive on my doorstep? In the last few days, strange things have happened in my life. The one thing that they warn you is that he says, I guarantee you won't find an easier or more effective way to deal with people who give you a hard time. And he said in this frightening new book that you must make certain that you wish this upon that individual alone and not his family. And then he gives various tips. And I'm not going to read it to you because I don't want you to get this black magic in your head. But I have actually told you this for a reason, because in one of the steps, they want you to visualize what happens to this person who is trying to hurt you, that you're wishing for, the hex you're putting on them, the misfortune you visualize, because that may be the misfortune your victim will suffer in real life. And you have to be very careful, and you have to consider the consequences of your actions before you proceed. Now, I have envisioned a certain individual who's been trying to harm me for a long time. It's a terrible image of him crashing off a cliff. I pray to God this doesn't happen. But if it does, I will let you know about it at that time in the future. And he says, by distilling the process, I have sped things up. If you are of average intelligence and put your mind to it, there is no reason you can't put a curse on someone in 5 minutes or less. So there it is. There is evil in the world. And sometimes the only way to fight evil is with evil. So you take it any way you want. 1-800-449-8255. I know that came out of left field. I know you never expected it. I know you never expected to hear that from Michael Savage. But strange things happen. Strange things demand strange reactions. And this image of the convertible going off the cliff is really frightening. But if it happens, what can I say? It happens. Pennsylvania, Joseph, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I just want to make a comment about the murder in Hollywood. The fact that there were no empty cartridge cases would also indicate that the murder was done with a revolver. Cartridge cases are left behind by a semi-automatic pistol.
You know, you're absolutely right. Yeah, right. How come that didn't? That took a genius to figure out. I didn't even think of it. You're right. In other words, if it was a semi-automatic, there might have been cartridge casings. But if it was a handgun that's a revolver, it stays inside the revolver.
Right. So a person would...
Let me ask you, Joseph, did you hear me talking about the curse thing before this?
Yes, I heard that, yes.
Do you believe that there's a way to put a hex on your enemies?
I believe there is, yes. However,
have you
sometimes that could be dangerous also to the person putting the hex. That could also be dangerous to the person applying the hex.
Yes, because what you're doing is marshaling up your own evil forces within yourself.
Yes. Putting a hex on someone may put you in contact with evil spirits, and they will tend to hold on to you after you're successful.
Ah, right, 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 right. Absolutely true. Well, that's very interesting. I appreciate that. Joseph, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Thank you for the call. New York City, WOR Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael.
Yes.
Yes, the poodle originated from Germany, and how it got to Europe was it was the favorite dog of the gypsies.
So the gypsies. Wait. The poodle originated in Germany, and how it got to Europe was it was the favorite dog of the gypsies?
Yes, the gypsies took a liking to that dog, and when they traveled in their caravan, the poodle went with them. So actually, that puppy, you know, got old.
Well, maybe I have gypsy blood. I don't know. That could explain why I like Teddy.
And the poodle is a German word for water. He was a bird dog.
Yeah, and that I know because they're great swimmers. Puddle.
Right. Now, here's one you didn't know. Of all the breeds in the world, only one breed was bred to attack humans, and it was done by a tax collector, and it was in Germany. His name was Doberman.
Devilman? I think I know him. I think I know him. He's a tax attorney. But anyway, let me ask you something. What's the breed? The poodle?
The poodle? No, the poodle is a friendly dog. He was a water dog, and the gypsies liked him. But the Doberman Pinscher was the dog that was bred to attack humans.
Oh, God, that dog scares me. That was in the movie Boys from Brazil. Remember that movie?
That's the only dog that was ever raised to attack humans. The rest were trained, but that dog was bred to attack humans.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm going to tell a whole story another day, but the Doberman was one of the favorite dogs of the troops in the Pacific in World War II that was trained to kill the Japanese in tunnels. Did you know that?
Yes. Yes.
But you want to hear an interesting story? That film series, War Dogs of the Pacific, they took these Dobermans after World War II when they helped these boys survive the most brutal fighting in history. And they were going to kill the dogs. And the men said, over my dead body, they wouldn't let the military kill the dogs. Of the 500 or so dogs that were trained to kill the Japanese in World War II, all but several of them were trained again to not kill and were given back to their families in the States, which I found to be amazing.
Right. And another dog that was brought into battle by the Romans was another English dog. It was called the Mastiff.
Oh, yes. Yes.
To fight on battlefields.
Yes, they drool pretty bad. I don't like dogs that drool, by the way. But the poodle was a favorite of the gypsies. I didn't know that.
Yes. And
well, I don't know. Maybe there's gypsy blood in me. I often wondered about that anyway. Sometimes I look at myself and say, who knows? I like dancing. I like caravans. I like violins. Who knows?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up.
key is China. North Korea has been the surrogate for China for a long time, going back 60 years ago to the Korean War. And China has to step in to make it plain to the North Koreans that their conduct is totally unacceptable. We have a lot of transactions with China, and we know the pressure points to get China to move.
As I walk along, I wonder what went wrong with our love, a love that was so strong. And as I still walk on, I think of...
Now, a North Korean missile would hit the U.S. in just 33 minutes, but that shouldn't concern you either because we have Michael Mullen in charge. Okay? China, Russia quit the dollar. They're not using the dollar as a basis of currency anymore. Big Sis is a miss. That's Janet Napolitano and Homeland Security. They're going to add body scanners to trains and boats in the metro. Plenty of money to be made yet. Isn't that great? 1-800-449-8255. In Afghanistan, where there is a war and our boys are still over there suffering and dying, violence is soaring, the insurgency is expanding, and the people in charge of the military are basically ignoring them completely. Former Obama advisor arrested on child sex charges. That's sad. We don't know who the advisor is, do we? Who is that? New Jersey congressman fires aide over child sex solicitation. Democratic Rep. Steve Rothman took the action of firing his chief of staff, a former aide to Obama, after the aide was arrested in Maryland on a charge of soliciting sex from a minor. Apparently, the aide, Robert DeSheen, was among 11 people caught up in a Gaithersburg, Maryland police sting. Police placed ads on a website, and an undercover officer communicated with customers through phone and text messages. Police said the former Obama advisor, a 48 years old, was arrested November 17th after soliciting to have sex with an underage girl. Well, that's nothing to these folks. No one in the liberal mainstream media would think that's a crime. They probably think it's very good to, you know, kind of initiate the girl into the kind of life that they can expect under Obamacare. Well, the protest against the airport security has not taken off. I guess that's a good thing. In a way, the lines are moving smoothly at airports around the country, despite the campaign to get Thanksgiving travelers to tie up the works on perhaps the busiest travel day of the year by refusing full body scans. I suppose that's a good thing. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Michael Mullen, says North Korea's attack on a South Korean island was tied to Kim Jong-il handing power to his son. In other words, he's justifying it. A Stepford wife like this is just what we don't need at a time of war, but that's what we have now. DHS is mulling an end of color-coded terror alerts. Wow, that's terrible. Man says he had bomb in backpack for 2 years. All 29 miners dead after second New Zealand blast. And Air Force One, Obama's wheels, or shall we say Obama's wings, cost $181,000 an hour to run. He is so far the most peripatetic of all presidents, and the cost is higher than for any other president in history. The Somali pirates who were tried in Germany, 5 of them were convicted. That's good. We'll see what happens now. Conservatives are at odds with the Vatican on condoms. And Rand Paul is going to write a book. How exciting. I'm sure nobody will buy it. Speaking of books, I noticed that Drudge reports the total sales of books that are out there, and he reports Trickle Up Poverty has sold 95,000. He's off by 30,000. According to my agent, it's 30,000 higher, so the Drudge report is once again inaccurate, as are most internet sites, incidentally. But then nobody can be perfect, okay? Anyway, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you pat the turkey down when you're cooking it tomorrow. And nobody's paying much attention to anything, which is the way it should be in a dumb society. Person is not supposed to pay attention in a society where people are asleep, and we want you to stay asleep. Read about how to get good abs or how to burn fat fast or get white teeth. That's what you need. Although the radical Muslims are circling you and they want to change your way of life or destroy you if you don't change according to what they want. It's good that you don't pay attention. That's the mark of a very sane citizen. The audio on the Savage Nation for today includes this of Nigel Farage, a British politician and leader of the UK Independence Party. He is also the representative for Great Britain in the European Union Parliament. And if you thought the last straight-talking Englishman had come and gone, listen to him because you're mistaken.
Just look around this chamber this morning. Just look at these faces. Look at the fear. Look at the anger. Poor old Barroso here looks like he's seen a ghost. You know, they're beginning to understand that the game is up. And yet, in their desperation to preserve their dream, they want to remove any remaining traces of democracy from the system.
Here is Farage speaking straight to the faces of all the representatives of the European Union, and he happens to call them fanatics who want to consign nation states to history.
You know, your fanaticism is out in the open. You talked about the fact that it was a lie to believe that the nation state could exist in a 21st century globalized world. Well, that may be true in the case of Belgium, who haven't had a government for 6 months, but for the rest of us, right across every member state in this union, and perhaps this is why we see the fear in the faces, increasingly people are saying, we don't want that flag, we don't want the anthem, we don't want this political class, we want the whole thing consigned to the dustbin of history.
Just listen to this man accusing Europeans of wanting to destroy democracy.
Just who the hell do you think you people are? You are very, very dangerous people indeed. Your obsession with creating this Euro state means that you're happy to destroy democracy. You appear to be happy for millions and millions of people to be unemployed and to be poor. Untold millions must suffer so that your Euro dream can continue.
Nigel Farage wrapped up his harangue of the European socialists, and although he got a few cheers, most of the Europeans in the chamber were simply stunned by the truth.
It's even more serious than economics, because if you rob people of their identity, if you rob them of their democracy, then all they are left with is nationalism and violence. I can only hope and pray that the Euro project is destroyed by the markets before that really happens.
Thank you.
I'm Michael Savage. Be here.
Savage.
Look, I could say Obama's the most inept president in history and could say it's the most corrupt administration in history, and you'd agree with me. Therefore, we're going to play rock and roll on the Savage Nation.
Each time we have a quarrel, it almost breaks my heart. 'Cause I'm so afraid that we will have to part. Each night I ask the stars up above, why must I be a teenager in love?
Well, the grave difficulty, as we all know, is that North Korea is irrational. They have enormous power with nuclear weapons. I was astounded when I visited South Korea years ago in Seoul to find out how close they were to North Korea. So Seoul is really at risk. And there is a hair trigger to erupt into a full-scale war. So the action has to be immediate, and China is the key.
Well, if you want to make me cry, that won't be so hard to do. If you should say goodbye, I'll still go on loving you.
U.S. and China can fix Korea mess. The North Korean military is big but aging. A blizzard hits Utah. Travel slowed. A swaying bridge is blamed for the stampede. That's terrible. The stocks are up on jobless news. Palin hits back at Bush, Mrs. Bush, that is. Good for her. Everyone should stop treating the Bushes like sacred cows. I would say cows, yes, sacred, no. Actor charged with mom's sword death. Facebook exposes Israeli draft dodgers. That's good. Real villain. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Speaking of which, I want to go to my own website and see what made it up to the website. Well, here it is. Facebook moves closer to trademarking the word face. Maybe they can trademark the word God one day. Air Force One costs $182,000 an hour to operate, and Obama has set a travel record. But then he's a green president, so it doesn't matter. The New York Times wouldn't report that. Did you see this story? Michael Savage to write two thrillers? What? Michael Savage, the combative talk radio host, according to the New York Times, has signed a deal to write two thrillers for St. Martin's Press, the publisher said yesterday. Until now, Mr. Savage has stuck to nonfiction with books such as Trickle Up Poverty. Mr. Savage, whose personal manifesto on his website calls for closing the United States' borders, ending affirmative action, and instituting a flat tax, attracts more than 9 million weekly listeners to his syndicated radio show, they say. So what are the novels about? Savage's first novel, Abuse of Power, will be set in San Francisco and tells the story of a failed carjacking that reveals a government cover-up, a sinister plot involving British officials and a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah, quote, that will make 9/11 look like child's play, unquote, the publisher said in a statement. It is scheduled for publication next summer. Matthew Shear, the publisher of St. Martin's, an imprint of Macmillan, said Michael Savage had the ability to fashion a good action-packed thriller that is sure to please his legions of fans, close quote. Well, they're right about that. The beauty of this novel is that it's set in my hometown of San Francisco, and I know it as well as, well, I know things about San Francisco. I like the back of my hand, as they say. Secretive locations, hidden alleys, islands. So we'll see what old Mike comes up with for next summer. What else do you want to know? I need a little music break here in the middle of talking. Not that anything's wrong. Some kind of rock and roll. No, that's a little maudlin. It's maudlin. It's No Heavenly Shades of Night. Give them something upbeat. You know, where are people going tonight? I learned my lesson yesterday with the ball game. Truth is, I don't know, there's not much out there that I like. All right, I like the bay. I like to look at the seals and the birds. It's true. I have more in common with them than I do with people at this point in my life. Not exactly that I'm anti-people. It's just that at a certain point, there's some beauty in animals. Oh, where's that animal story about what they're doing to the bears up here? Oh, I promised the Humane Society of America I would speak out about to stop the Nevada bear hunt. You're not going to believe this story. The Nevada Wildlife Commission has proposed allowing the trophy hunting of black bears for the first time in Nevada history. If permitted, this trophy hunt would last over 6 months, including in the spring, leaving orphan cubs unable to survive alone and allowing hunters to send packs of dogs with radio collars to chase bears up trees and then shoot them point blank. With a relatively small and stable population of bears in the area, the Nevada Wildlife Commission has demonstrated no need to initiate a black bear trophy hunt. Please take just a minute to submit your comments to the members of the Nevada Wildlife Commission, as well as the Nevada Department of Wildlife, expressing your opinion, your opposition to a black bear trophy hunt in Nevada. Let's stop the hunt before it starts. Wayne Purcell, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. 100% right. If you ever heard a bear crying when he is caught by a pack of dogs and the cheap, cowardly hunters approach him to execute him, you'd be on the side of the Humane Society. And that's right, you heard me say that. The cheap, cowardly hunters go there with high-powered rifles and scopes and hunt down this poor animal that hurt nobody. Now, the reason they're killing them is because they're cowards and they can't kill people. That's number one. I really don't care if you don't like what I'm saying. It does not matter to me. Do you understand that? I care more about the animals than my listenership right now. What's going on in Nevada is going on throughout the West right now, maybe even in the East. You've got some bad bears who are coming down and they're lazy like liberals and they're living off the garbage. They don't want to work. They don't want to pick flowers. They don't want to go for honey. They want to just get the garbage out of the can the same way your liberal neighbors do. They want everything for nothing like Freddie and Fannie. They want to free this and a government check. You know, send me my government check, you know, rub my belly. So they're just like that. They're the bad bears. And who's getting punished? The wild bears they want to hunt and kill and chase up trees with a pack of vicious dogs that bite them and tear them to ribbons and leave the orphan cubs crying in the wilderness who become nothing but food for the other predators. I am totally opposed to the bear hunt. You know, I got to tell you something. You don't know much about sushi. I don't eat it. I do eat it, but it should not be raw. Don't eat raw fish ever again. I had this experience in Florida. I go to a seafood place. I ordered the tuna, and she says to me, I said, make sure it's cooked all the way through. She says, oh, the chef likes to cook a tank in the middle. I said, who's paying for it, me or the chef? Well, the chef likes to cook it then the way it should be. She said, and she tries to lecture me, Miss O.H.'s. I said, honey, I live in San Francisco. I get the best seafood in the world. I don't eat raw fish. I said, I don't like worms of any kind. I don't like protozoans, acanthocephalans. I don't like nematodes or cestodes or copepods or isopods. Tell the cook to cook it my way or go to the highway. The fish comes out tasting like a Brooklyn Dodgers catcher's mitt. They spited me, in other words. They overcooked it to prove to me I didn't know what I was talking about in terms of fish. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to eat fish like this, whether it's wahoo, tuna, or even dolphin, which is disguised as something else, or mahi, or ono, or ahi and yuppie, whatever you want to call it, I'm telling you, never eat raw fish, and never eat fish pink, no matter what Mr. San Francisco chef says to you, because fish are notoriously sick with what I just mentioned to you, protozoans, acanthocephalons, nematodes, cestodes, copepods, and isopods. I wouldn't eat it. Don't eat raw fish, period.
Savage.
We know that Obamanomics is failing. The world is in a financial crisis. And Obama's answer is to travel the world giving speeches that are doing nothing to help anybody but his own self-image. Joining us now from the Cato Institute is Daniel Mitchell, whose recent article in the New York Post is entitled Obamanomics, Leaving the World Nervous. Daniel Mitchell, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be on the program.
What is the gist of your article?
I'm really talking about two different things. One is U.S. monetary policy, specifically this so-called quantitative easing, or QE2, from the Federal Reserve, where we're going to, in effect, be printing $600 billion of hot money and dumping it into the economy. And a lot of other countries around the world are concerned about this causing instability, causing bubbles, distorting trade. But also part of it is that normally, the rest of the world looks to us as sort of being the grown-ups, being responsible, and for us to follow what some people are worried is an Argentinian-style monetary policy. That's one thing getting a lot of Americans very Americans, but also Europeans very nervous.
Well, sure, okay.
The other thing is that our fiscal policy, so shifting from monetary policy to fiscal policy, our fiscal policy, with all the red ink, the wasteful so-called stimulus spending, government-run health care, a lot of other countries are looking at what's happened in Greece. They're looking at what's happening in Portugal and Ireland and Spain and some of these other European welfare states. And there's a lot of concern that America is making that same mistake. But the problem is, if Greece goes bankrupt, so what? It's like you stub your toe. If America goes down the tubes fiscally, we drag the whole rest of the world down with us, probably. And so there's good reason why the rest of the world, and we saw this at the G20 summit, the rest of the world is worried about the big government policies of the Obama administration, both monetary policy and fiscal policy.
Well, I don't know how long this printing of money policy can keep up. What about you?
In theory, I want to be fair, in theory, if the Federal Reserve is simply printing money because they expect there to be more demand for money next year, in other words, they're offsetting potential deflation, it's possible, fingers crossed, that this won't blow up in our face. I'm not terribly optimistic, though, and so what I'm concerned about is all this money creation is going to give us a repeat, at best, of the Jimmy Carter years, which meant, of course, higher inflation rates, higher interest rates, economic stagnation. We even had a special term invented for the Carter years called stagflation, the combination of high unemployment and rising prices. So that's something that should worry us as Americans, and, of course, it worries the rest of the world because our economy is big enough that when we screw up, we drive other countries into a ditch as well.
Well, who's getting desperate in the Obama administration? Don't they realize it's failing?
I think the Obama administration is very concerned about the re-election prospects of the president in 2012. And what do we know about inflation? Well, we know that inflation is sort of like, I don't know, going out to a bar and having three drinks. You have three drinks, you're feeling pretty good. You have nine drinks, you're in trouble, and the next morning you wake up with a really bad hangover, and that's the problem with inflation. If you want to be a politician who's willing to sacrifice the best interests of the country, and you're willing to say, okay, we're going to artificially goose the economy in the short run with higher inflation for maybe a year or so, and obviously they're hoping into 2012, you can artificially goose the economy as that money begins to seep throughout the system. It makes all of us feel as if we're richer, but of course there's not actually more production in the economy. There's just more dollars chasing the same amount of goods. And that, as Milton Friedman reminded us, is the definition of inflation. And so I think Obama is playing a very, very risky game. I'm disappointed that the Federal Reserve is not standing up for its theoretical independence and going along with the administration on this. And I'm just hoping, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that somehow this actually is going to do nothing else other than offset deflation that might otherwise have occurred. But I just don't think that's the case.
How is the World Economic Council reacting?
I think we saw at the G20 summit that there is a lot of concern about what all of this means in terms of future stability of the world economy. Remember, America is supposed to be the grown-up. We're supposed to be the place that everyone else can at least look to as a safe haven. We're not going to be like Argentina or Zimbabwe or Greece or Italy or Spain or Ireland or any of these other countries that spend themselves into oblivion. And this is what's so shocking. We're not acting like the adults we've historically been. We're the ones that are veering too far to the left, and even welfare states like Germany are saying, you guys are going too far in the wrong direction. And boy, when the Germans are saying that you're following too much of a big government approach, you really know that you've gone off the rails.
Are there any signs that things are going to get better?
Well, there's really two questions. Is there light at the end of the fiscal policy tunnel, and is there light at the end of the monetary policy tunnel? Well, in theory, when the American voters rose up and knocked Nancy Pelosi out of the speaker's chair, that may mean, you know, fingers crossed, who knows, Republicans sometimes can be just as corrupt big spenders as Democrats. But in theory, with the Tea Party looking over their shoulders, Republicans in the House may at least stop additional new bad spending ideas coming from Washington. Now, of course, they can't undo all the damage that's already occurred unless they can somehow get the Senate, Harry Reid, and President Obama to go along with them. But at least in theory, we may not dig the hole even deeper. That's an open issue. We don't know. Now, on monetary policy, it doesn't matter if Republicans had 435 House seats.
Why do you say that?
The Fed can do whatever they want, and the Fed, Bernanke, it's obviously climbed into bed with the Treasury Department and the Obama White House, and they think this QE2, quantitative easing, $600 billion of hot money into the system, they think that's going to work. I don't think that Ben Bernanke actually is doing this to help Obama get reelected. I think he's doing it because he's scared that he doesn't want to go down in history as the Fed chairman when the economy stayed weak. And so printing money and then, you know, maybe leave the inflation problem for the next Fed chairman, that may be what's driving him a bit. But it's hard to say, but we just have to keep our fingers crossed that it's not going to lead to a 1970-style disaster.
What can we expect to see in the next few years?
I suppose the in terms of monetary policy, the number one thing for your listeners to look at is what's happening to interest rates on 10-year government bonds, 30-year government bonds, other interest rates in the economy. And so far in the last couple of weeks, we're seeing interest rates tick up. Now, remember, one of the theories, Bernanke and his people are saying we need to add the $600 billion of hot money to the economy to drive interest rates down. But we're actually seeing interest rates go in the other direction. Why? Because people in financial markets aren't completely stupid. They understand that if you're throwing lots of hot money into the system and that's going to lead to higher inflation, well, you don't want to lend out money at 2% if you think inflation is going to be 4%. So, of course, you're going to ask for a higher interest rate. So I'm not surprised we're seeing some sign of higher interest rates, and that's one of the key economic variables to look at.
But what about fiscal policy?
In terms of fiscal policy, what to look at? The immediate battle is a tax battle, and that's whether or not we make permanent the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts. We don't want higher marginal tax rates on investors, entrepreneurs, small business owners, and other so-called rich taxpayers next year, because that would really be just a punch in the kidneys to the economy. But then, obviously, you agree from what you've been talking about for a long time on the program, we need to get the federal government under control. Now, in theory, the Republican House of Representatives can at least play a role in that by saying, no, we're not going to pass new appropriations or spending bills that have government growing 6, 7, 8% a year. And that, I think, we'll have to look closely to see what the reaction is to Obama's budget early next year. Will Obama himself have learned a lesson and not be spending like a drunken sailor? And if he does have a drunken sailor budget, will the Republicans say it's dead on arrival? Those are the things I would look at.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one sort of unifying theme, whether we're looking at monetary policy, fiscal policy, the unifying theme to all this is that we are on a path to becoming a Greek-style fiscal and monetary catastrophe. Except the Greeks don't even have their own currency anymore, so at least they can't try to print their way out of trouble. So we're really almost going to be more like Argentina or, heaven forbid, like Zimbabwe. We need to turn around. We're at the edge of the abyss right now with too much government, too much reckless policy. We need to turn back in the direction of individual liberty, free markets, and limited government.
Dan Mitchell, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, I appreciate the chance to talk about these issues and keep up the good work.
Unemployment is still high. Spending and debt are going through the roof. You're shocked by that? Now you know what I mean by trickle-up poverty? It's trickling up to you? Get informed. Stuff yourself with the truth. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I wonder who wrote the book of love. Tell me,
wrote the book of love.
I've got to know the answer.
I gotta go on a diet, man. I packed on weight when the book came out. I was doing good. I'd lost 10 pounds. Getting ready, you know, for the battle. I shed weight. I was feeling good. Looked in the mirror, looking good. Then around the time, you know, you start to get, you eat more around the tension. I'm one of those who eats around tension. I eat. I'm from that culture. We don't starve ourselves and just drink scotch and eat white bread and mayonnaise. We go into the food department. We hit the fridge. We open that box 100 times a day and pull out whatever's in there. So I put it on again. I mean, but it's like I'm like an opera singer. I mean, I do need energy in order to get up here every day, don't I? So today I try to stay away from a lot of meat. Truthfully, you know that I'm an omnivore and I'm not against the carnitine found in red meat. I've told you we need it because we're omnivores. I'm not a veg, but I try to, you know, for years I've stayed away from heavy meats, except on a, but like last night we were in the place there. I loved it. So she got the bolognese, right? The silent G. People say bolognese. That's like going to IHOP. I will have the spaghetti bolognese, please. It's like Olive Garden. So I had the spaghetti bolognese. I didn't eat the bolognese. I had the fish and whatever. But I took home the spaghetti bolognese from the other because no one could eat. It was too much, the portion. I knew what I was going to do. I ate it for lunch just before the show. I took it in like a doctor pharmacist. I won't throw food away. It was so good. I want to talk about nutrition because it's a field I know a lot about. I mean, this distinguishes me from anybody else in talk radio. In fact, in the history of talk radio. I'm going to read for you now a list of books by Michael Savage, 1972, Earth Medicine, Earth Food, about American Indian foods and medicines. 1972, mind you. I think it is still in print. I'm not sure. I know it was reprinted in 1980. 1975, Plant a Tree. 1976, I wrote a children's book called Bugs in the Peanut Butter, published by Little Brown, for the kiddies to see what toxins were in their foods even then. Remember, 1976? when most of the fakers in the conservative talk business were either still pinko liberal pot smokers in law school or whatever. Then came Man's Use for Plants, 1976, which, by the way, won an award for outstanding science books for children in 1976, believe it or not. It's true. Then I got interested in beer, and I started brewing beer and traveling to breweries. I wrote The Taster's Guide to Beer, Macmillan, 1977. Then came the heavy-duty nutrition stuff, 1981, The Way of the Skeptical Nutritionist, Macmillan, 1981. It's actually a very, very good book. There's still some good info in it. In 82, I did The Art of Feeding Children Well, which I've republished as Healing Children Naturally, which is still available on michaelsavage.com. It's a great book. I'd like to save the world from the pain children are put through by the quacks who push drugs on them by reading that book. Nutrition Against Aging, Bantam published in 83. Secrets of Fijian Medicine, 1983. It's a very important book, little known, not important for you, because it's about the plants of the Fijian Islands that were used by folk healers who I lived with and how they use them in medicine. It was published by a division. It was the first book that the UN ever paid for. Would you believe it to be published? Yes, the UN. And the Fijian government got a grant from the UN to publish the book. It's a wonderful book. It's a great legacy of mine. I'm very proud of it. Getting Off Cocaine was published in 1984. I pioneered nutritional treatment for people hung up on cocaine. It was a very important book at the time. It's been completely forgotten. 1986, big blast of a book, Maximum Immunity. And Houghton Mifflin published it. It's in six languages and still has some very useful information. It gives you a great... You can't buy any of these books, so I'm not selling them to you. What did I do? Maximum Immunity, Houghton Mifflin, 1986. Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, 1987. A very important book, 20 years ahead of its time. I was talking about the use of antioxidants in the prevention of the development of Alzheimer's. I also talked at length about neurotoxic metals such as aluminum. Don't underestimate the importance of that information. 1989, The Complete Book of Homeopathy. 1992, The Herbal Bible. Herbs That Heal, 1994. The Antioxidant Cookbook, 1995. The Death of the White Male, 1991. Well, that's more political. Now we get into the political books. The Savage Nation, 2002. And here come the bestsellers. Let's see. The Enemy Within, 2003. Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, 2005. The Political Zoo, 2006. Psychological Nudity, 2008. Banned in Britain, 2009. And, of course, my blockbuster, Trickle Up Poverty, which is likely going to be my last book in the whole sequence of nonfiction. It may be my last nonfiction book. I match this to anybody in the history of talk radio. Nobody can match it. No matter what you may hear people saying about me, there's something that they can't take away from me, and they never can. And that's this track record I've just given you. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There's so much more I can do, but I can't do it all in one day. Let's go to callers. That's the important thing. New York, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael. A couple of weeks ago, you were talking about a impressionistic show that you saw, you know, particularly Van Gogh, and how wonderful it was. You have to remember that when they painted, they weren't readily accepted. It took 50 years for them to be accepted.
Yes.
And that may be true with you. You know, here you have 8 million now listening to you at a 320 or whatever is in this country. As you continue on, more and more will catch up to you.
Yeah, but I don't think I can do radio for another 50 years. That's the problem.
We're in a different time warp.
That's right? True. If things are accelerated. You're right. Electronically, 50 years today could be 5 years.
Right. Exposure in the 1880s to, you know, 2010. It's totally different. And I would think that maybe the idea of you running for the Senate.
Well, you know, there's an old saying that in medicine, the way when I was early on in the health, the medical health field, meaning I was into alternative medicine before it became fashionable. I was writing books on nutrition and herbal medicine, homeopathy, and people considered it crazy and insane. I don't know of one listener to this show who probably doesn't take a vitamin on a regular basis. Probably very few. Particularly men over 40. So, you know, we've come a long way, baby. But the way it worked was this in medicine. Any new invention or any new finding in medicine was usually at first ignored by the medical establishment. After it was ignored, it was ridiculed. After it was ridiculed, it was attacked. And then finally it was accepted. So there are stages to acceptance for new ideas or new delivery systems. I have been in this business for 16 years. I pioneered the concept of the independent conservative. Remember that. Rush has always been a water carrier for the Republican Party. He even admitted it at one point, but then he backed off from that. And so, therefore, I accept to be ignored. I mean, I expect to be ignored. Just like any other innovator, at first you're ignored, then you're attacked or ridiculed, and then eventually you're accepted. So it's no question, there's no question that in time, many, many more millions of people will get the message that is in trickle-up poverty, because it goes well beyond the radio show. It sort of memorializes everything this man has done to us and wants to do to us. You know that I found that if someone Googles Michael Savage while the show is on, they get it off a station in Cincinnati?
Savage.